हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Women. We were on what, up to 7-5? Is that what we were up to? What was that?
Was
5-1-5-4? 1-5-4. The verse number would be? 154. No, weren't we up to like the third chapter? This, because we finished the marriage rites, no? The qualities of the rites. We did Grihastha Brahmacharya. No?
Yeah.
And then, but did we start on this honor of women?
Mm-hmm.
We did. We finished that? Laws. Oh, okay. Duties of a snataka, we did that. Purification of men and things. Okay. Okay, 13. Okay. Thus the rules of personal purification for men of all castes and those for cleaning inanimate things have been fully declared to you. Here now the duties of women. Always dependent. By a girl, by a young woman, or even by an aged one, nothing must be done independently, even in her own house. In childhood, a female must be subject to her father, in youth to her husband, and when her lord is dead, to her sons. A woman must never be independent. She must not seek to separate herself from her father, husband, or sons. By leaving them, she would make both her own and her husband's families contemptible. We did some of this, no? Though destitute of virtue or seeking pleasure elsewhere or devoid of good qualities, yet a husband must be constantly respected by a faithful wife. No sacrifice, no vow, no fast must be performed by women apart from the husbands. If a wife obeys her husband, she will for that reason alone be exalted in heaven. A faithful wife who desires to dwell with her husband must never do anything that might displease him, who took her hand, whether he be alive or dead. So the principle here is that we're dealing with the principles of the energies. Is that Krishna's created, because he's masculine, the energies, anything expanded from him except the Vishnu Tattva is feminine. So then the nature is that it's dependent. That's how it functions. Like you see a woman, if she's confident and that, then that's because she has some situation that she's fixed to that she feels strong about. So it has to be in one of these kind of forms. There has to be something she's connected to. If she's just on her own with no connection to anything that's stable, then the tendency will be to be not satisfied. Because that's the nature of energy.
Because energy, if it's connected, it means something. Like you'll see a fire, at the bottom of the fire, it's stable, it doesn't flicker. But the top flickers, moves, changes, all this. So that's the whole point, is where it connects, that's what makes it, and then the top will be all over the place. So that's the nature. But sometimes, if you've seen, sometimes the fire, it gets so enthusiastic, sometimes flames will come up and extend themselves from the fire, like there's some extra smoke or something that it can move in. And it will flicker, but as soon as it becomes detached, it immediately goes out. Right? That will be seen. So that aspect is there, electricity. If it's connected, it works. If it becomes disconnected, it doesn't function anymore. So if that principle is seen, then you know how it works. There's a connection. Prabhupada makes this, it's natural. You see children. Children that are very confident and outgoing is because they have parents who are, you know, are there, that they have confidence in. They have trust in. So then they can be outgoing, they can be prominent, they can do all these different things. Does that make sense? Or Prabhupada talks about in Bombay, he walks down the beach, right? You know, we've all seen the local dogs, right? They don't look very confident and everything like that. The ones that do, it's because they're recognized, right? Like generally, like you can see in Mayapur here, you don't see any confident dogs, right? But you do see one around here. Right? Because the Gurukul, that's their dog, right? So he feels confidence, his place, because he has support. So then he can be a real, you know, dog's dog. Otherwise, then not. Other dogs you see are not, because they don't have a shelter. Like that. Prabhupada commented when he was walking down the beach in Bombay. He'd go down in the morning down the beach. And the dogs that, just the local dogs, and they always look this way, that way, and everything. The dogs that have masters and are walking on leashes, and they look, feel very confident and very proud, and like that. They feel very bold, they can go out and do things like that. So that's the nature. If that's understood, then it works. So that means you have to connect somewhere. That's any energy. So even the men ultimately have to do that, because they're also energy, because they're jivas. But it's working through the masculine, how you say, flavor, the subtle body. So we're not talking about that, but it has to be in some way that connection one feels confident. Either the father, the husband, the son, you know, the association of the devotees, spiritual master, something that there is a steadiness or stableness to. Then if that's there, then one is confident. Like that. Men can function without that as so much, or they'll create their own. They don't mind. Men that can't create their own, they also have to be connected to another man where they have that confidence. Right? Like that. But otherwise, they created themselves. But a woman of the same nature as a man who has to connect himself also to other man to get that, she has to connect herself to such a man. Does that make sense? Didn't make sense. Makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense over here? Kind of. You notice it made sense to the Indian women? Because they understood what I was talking about. Okay, let's be direct. Shudras, half men, have to connect themselves to a Brahma, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to function on their own. Because they can't, they themselves cannot create their own stability. That's why Shudras are dependent. Because their nature is such, Shudra means one who laments. So they will always be lamenting. So that's the point, is they have to connect themselves to someone who doesn't lament. Then life can be, you know, look optimistic. So a Shudra woman, she still has to connect herself to a Shudra man. Because she's of the same nature, but will be a little bit more lamenting. And so the Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya women, they also, though they may be less anxiety than, let's say, a Shudra man, but they're more anxiety than someone of their own nature. A Brahmin woman may be less unstable in her emotions and everything than a Shudra man. But still, she has to connect herself to a Brahmin man to create her stability. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's how the holy. So that means something has to be there. You know, if it's just Krishna, you just connect yourself there. That's fine. But that means then other social things are cut down considerably. Right. I mean, someone who just takes Krishna as that shelter, then that has to be real. It can't just be stated. It has to be real. That Krishna is the maintainer, Krishna is the protector. Because these are the two qualities that one has to look at. This is the bottom line. You know, when push comes to shove, it's maintenance and protection. These are the things, which means gain and safety. Maintenance is gain, protection is safety. Right? Krishna mentions these two qualities in the Gita. The giving up gain and safety, just surrender to Him. So that's where the point comes. So because of that natural dependency, the tendency is the women will need to have that. So if they have a man or some form that they can trust in that, then it makes some sense to them. Then as they advance, then they can transfer that from the material platform to the spiritual. Right? If the principle of manhood is trusted, then you can easily transfer it to Krishna, because He's a man. Because it's very common, I've seen, that women who can't trust men don't trust Krishna either. You know, when you ask questions and go after it, pursue it, then you find out really they don't trust Krishna either. That's why they have to do everything themselves. They just don't trust. You know, they just don't trust. Because it's a principle of energy connecting to energetic. That's why it's so important. That's why we don't get involved in it so much. Socially it works, we know how the energies work, so it functions like that. That's all. But other than that, then it's not considered an important to get caught up in. You know, it means, in other words, you wouldn't want to start a movement about it. Because if we're not the body, why start a movement about it? Why do you care? You know? Does that make some sense? Something that you identify with, that's what you crusade about. Right? People would only crusade about Jerusalem because they identified with it. Right? Anything that you know, blue whales, you know, you identify with them, then you go out there in your little boats and all that, and, you know, stand in the way of the oil tankers and get, you know, sunk by them, you know, stuff like that. You have to identify. So that means to start a movement based on the principle of feminineness, that means you have to identify with it. You have to be fully convinced, I am a woman, therefore it's worth fighting for. Because material woman is valuable, right? I mean, it must be good. It sold a lot of copies, right? So that's the principle, right? So like that, then you would do that. But if you understand I'm not, but this is what I have to deal with, so you know what it is, know how to make it work, and find what is the way to connect it. What is the easiest way? Like that. Because ultimately everybody has to do it because everybody is female. But at the same time you're dealing with the feminine conditioned nature, which has to connect itself in some way to some other conditioned nature that is stable. Right? As we mentioned, it, energy has to connect to something stable that it can be connected to. The other end can flap around. It doesn't matter. Like that. But the one end has to be stable. Otherwise, all the ups and downs and changes and all that have no meaning. Right? It's only a worthwhile experience of constantly changing emotions and thoughts if there is a stability. If there's not, then it doesn't have any meaning. You know what I'm saying? Then it's just an anxiety. Does that make some sense? Yeah? So that's the principle that it's working on. So here we see where it functions due to conditioned nature, and we see how it actually matures into spiritual consideration. Right? The first thing is connecting the nature here. Then as that matures by engaging that in Krishna's service, then how to ultimately connect that to Krishna. Krishna is the actual maintainer. He's the actual protector. Right? No man has ever satisfied a woman in history. Right? There's never been one woman who's been fully satisfied by being taken care of by any man anywhere. But there's never been a woman not connected who was, you know, even that satisfied. They're even less. Right? So, but the principle is so ultimately, whatever you can get, one man can only provide so much. Because he's limited. The point is, Krishna's not. So the women of the spiritual realm are fully satisfied. Why? Because Krishna is fully male. So he can fully take care of whatever the feminine needs are. Right? And there's only one woman who can access and take advantage of every aspect that Krishna has. And that's Radharani. Because he's full Godhead and she's full energy. So every aspect that he has, every point, then there's both male and female. Everybody else is an expansion of her. So that means we're portions, or portions of portions, of those natures. Right? Because we're not unlimited. Jivas aren't unlimited. Right? We're finite. So then, therefore, Krishna easily can satisfy that. Because he's unlimited and we're finite. So that means whatever needs we have can be done by Krishna. So we can have actual faith that even mathematically is possible. So we just have to be able to connect it there. That's the point. So whatever is gaining, if we understand, if we're not this body, then that means the men are not their body either. Right? If we're not the doer, that means they're not the doer. So it means whatever we deserve, we're getting through those men, but that is still, they're just the medium for what Krishna is giving us. Right? Krishna is giving us something through that man. So ultimately, in the beginning, we tend to see, you know, the external. Then with time, we start to see is actually Krishna is the male principle. He's the one taking care. He is the one providing. So he's the maintainer. And he's the one that's protecting. Right? So that's the whole point. If Krishna wants something, someone to be protected, no one can harm them. If Krishna wants to harm them, no one can protect them. So that's the point. He is the one that creates the greatest safety. Is this understood? This is a very valuable fundamental principle if we want to just understand the feminine nature. If that's understood, then you understand what is actually feminine nature. This is just a reflection of the original. Does that make sense? Like that. It's only a reflection. The difference being is there, it's understood their energy and they're dependent on Krishna. So they're in the feminine mood. Here, then every jiva is in the mood that they're masculine or the controller and enjoyer of what they're doing. So that makes for the interesting, collage or cocktail or, you know, chutney or something, you know, a mix of yeah, how you say?
Was,
yeah. Or that one of chutney, right? So hot you can't eat it. So sweet you can't resist, right? That sums it up, I think. So like that is then, that principle is there, is that you have a feminine form that has acts and desires like feminine, but it has masculine ideas of how to go about it. Moods, not in actual activity. I'm saying the drive for accomplishing it is masculine. The methods and the needs will be feminine. Does that make some sense? So that's why you end up with this funny mix, you know? And the man is going to have that masculine, it means it's going to be feminine nature that's gone masculine, that now comes to a masculine, manifestation, reflection. So they'll have both of those moods. That's why it becomes rough, because masculine doesn't mean rough. You know, so the feminine forms are very gentle. You put on top of that the material drive, and that makes it a little rougher. Right? So you take the masculine mood, which is, you know, can be very gentle, the interaction. You see Krishna in his interactions with all the ladies in Braj, then it's very gentle. with his mothers, with his with the girlfriends, with the servants, with anyone, with the friends, like that. But then you put on top of that the desire to be the enjoyer, you know, or not. So that makes that rough. Right? But both of them are energy, so both have to connect to Krishna. So that's the difficulty, is here then that roughness due to the masculine drive, that is what has to be addressed. You have to know what is the masculine and feminine nature, and then you have to know what we're not. We're not the controller and enjoyer. So when that's given up, that's the codes of the law, is to create that gentleness. So at least you try to reduce the that mood, that Purusha Bhava. Purusha means masculine, Bhava means mood. So Purusha Bhava means I'm the controller and enjoyer. I'm God. That's what the living entity is polluted with. So in other words, if you remove that middle thing, then you have somebody who is identifies as servant of Krishna, so they have the right mood as energy. But at the same time, is they utilize what facility they have, either masculine or feminine, in the Lord's service. So then you see a very nice person that has all good qualities. That's why it says the devotee has all the qualities of the demigods. Because you remove that masculine mood of exploitive, of trying to control, trying to enjoy. Does that make some sense here? Like that. If that's caught, everything else fits into this. And then you can see how all these things simply are to ensure that. But they themselves aren't the real meaning, because we're not trying to become men or trying to become women. We're not trying to become any of the Varnashram system. We're trying to become devotees. But we're trying to live the culture that they live in the spiritual realm. And that's Varnashram. Right? But there is spontaneous, it's part of the mood and everything. You know? Like that. So therefore, then it works very nicely. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So that's what we're trying to get to. So if that's recognized, it makes life very simple, because you know, okay, this is the mood, this is what we deal with, this is what I'm supposed to do, so there's no mentalness, what should I do, what should I... No, you just have to work on day-to-day application. But you don't, your existential, you know, contemplation doesn't have to have any, you know, undecidedness about it. It can be very focused and very straightforward. Is that I know I'm a servant of Krishna, and I know the facility I have is a feminine nature, so therefore engage that in Krishna's service. Then it becomes very easy. Then it's just a matter of what's practical, what's day to day, what you should do to engage that. And then contemplating more how more and more Krishna is involved in that. Krishna is part of that. Okay, Krishna told us to do this. But do we remember? Okay, in the beginning as Krishna said, okay, we should take a bath like this. So we do that, but we're thinking of something else. But one could be thinking of Krishna while one was taking his bath, the way Krishna said to take a bath. So there's always that scope to fully bring Krishna into it. But at least it's got to start somewhere, right? You got to let Krishna get the foot in the door somewhere. So that's the point, is that the foot in the door is just accepting the principle that this is how it functions. Does that make some sense? Like that. Yeah.
So, here, therefore, this is the point why. Because otherwise you say, well, he's destitute of virtue. What's the point? No, but it's the connection to the masculine principle that's the point. Because you have to be able to transfer it to Krishna. So it's if you can transfer it to Krishna, then one doesn't have to live with such a husband. But then it has to have been transferred to Krishna. Otherwise, you'll just transfer it to another man. Leaving one man, it'll go to another. Does that make sense? It has to. Because that's the conditioned nature. Right? So if one can't put it fully on Krishna, then one has to stick with such a person. Or separate and create the distance that will make it comfortable. You know, whatever it is. You know, next door, next block, next city, next country. You know, it's not an option, next planet, but you know, whatever it is. You can always hope for that. You know, but you know, one has to at least be able to coexist in, you know, 24,000, you know, miles, you know, like that. The maximum you can get apart is 12,000, so you have to be satisfied with that. You know? Just like I say, Adelaide, the exact opposite of it, I think, is Los Angeles. So that's as far away as you can get.
you know, like that. So you know, you can choose your spots, you know, like that.
Maharaj, you know how you said that real life proportion of proportion, uh-huh. that in this material world, then your masculine and feminine nature, is it a reflection of Shiva and Parvati?
It actually comes down through that flavor, because here you get Purusha, the Purusha Shakti. Purusha Shakti means she wants to enjoy her feminineness. In the spiritual realm, the femininity, it's offered to Krishna as their actual love. And it's Krishna who enjoys that. But here, the women want to enjoy their femininity. They use it to advantage. They use their femininity to get things, you know, in sensual connection. Then they enjoy that connection themselves. So they are also Purusha. That's why it's different. That's why it's been transformed. Krishna, that mood's transformed into Shiva, you know, which is the identity, I, you know, the very masculine. And the feminine is transformed into that. So it's all expansions of Shiva and Parvati. You know, that's
the thing. Is there some reason why it's like Shiva and Parvati and like Indra and Shiva?
Because they're expansions of him. Shiva's first. Brahma Samhita, then you see, is that Krishna, he glances onto the, into the, how do you say? Karuna Dakshaya Vishnu creates the universes. Then in the universe, that's the feminine energy, right? And then he glances, that glance is Sadashiv. So that's Shiva. So there has to be ignorance involved, that's the thing. Ignorance must be involved. And ego, false ego, must be involved to actually take the conditioned nature seriously. Like that. To have the needs of that. So then, therefore, that's why it transforms. So the flavor is there, is Shiva and Parvati. Though the whole culture is just a reflection. What the difference is Shiva and Parvati means it's a mood change. Right? It means the energy from being only servant is enjoyer. Right? And the masculine also is enjoyer separate from Krishna. Right? Shiva is a devotee, but he's also a separate enjoyer. But he is real. He is Purusha. Because he is the Lord of the material energy. But the others are not. So what is actually happening is the female forms are all expansions of the various qualities of Parvati. And all the male forms are actually expansions of all the qualities of Shiva. So that's the conditioned nature. So that it's just an interaction between Shiva and Parvati. So that's why the rules need to be followed, is because Shiva wants to deal with Parvati in this way. So depending upon what, it doesn't matter what it is, how weird and how perverted or strange it gets, it's still Shiva and Parvati. But they have expansions that go out farther and farther and farther and weirder and weirder. You know, like Kala Bhairav and this and that. I mentioned to you, I think it's, I don't know if it's Chandi. Someone said it's a different one. Chandi's, I've heard Chandi's wilder than this one. It means there's one of the forms of Durga where she is stark naked. She's already cut off her own head in her passion of killing the demons. She's holding the head in her upside down in one hand with a chopper in the other, and the blood is squirting out. You know, and her naked associates are drinking that blood. They're also fed girls. So that form is there. You know? Like that. Or there's one, did I mention this? Matangi? Wasn't in this. There's one form called Matangi. That is a form, this will sound familiar to you, it's a very popular form in the 60s. Is a woman who has sex with strangers and eats remnants of food. That's how you can identify that particular expansion. So if you go back 60s, hippies, that's the way they are. You know, you come down, anything eating, you just eat it. Like that, you know, whoever you happen to be next to at night, you know, that's who you have, who you sleep with. And it's just perfectly normal. Morning, you go off this way, they go off that way. So that is Matangi. So there's a masculine form that matches Matangi. Right? As Parvati is expanded to Matangi, Shiva is expanded to a masculine form that matches. Does that make sense? So all that's going on is this. So you follow, you know, these higher virtuous rules and you deal higher up and your consciousness is elevated. You don't, even you just do be an animal, still there's a form of that, because every animal species, everything, its masculine and feminine nature is coming from Krishna, from Shiva and Parvati. When the glance is there, Shiva goes into the universe, then he impregnates the material energy. He does that through sex. So therefore, because that's done through sex, then every living entity that comes after that in the creation is male or female. Like that. So it comes from there. It's all based on... So that's the difference, I would say, is that the spiritual realm is more based on the, you know, the... How do you say? The interaction is more focused on the upper chakras, while the material world, it'll be more focused on the lower chakras. Like that. So that's the difference. The spiritual world, you hear Krishna and Radharani and the gopis, you know, hugging and kissing and like that. You know, but here you just hear Shiva and Parvati just having sex. Like that. That pastime where how Shiva became a linga. I forget who came in, who was coming to visit him. They came to visit him, but he was having sex with Parvati. And somehow the person who came wasn't very pleased, so he cursed them that he'll be always worshipped as a linga. Right? Huh? Oh, Lord Brahma came. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, no one will worship you. Yeah. Okay. Like that. So he's always worshipped like that because that's what they spend a lot of time doing. So that's the principle. Is that that's the way it's made. So it's just a matter of understanding how it works and functioning with that. So if that's understood, then one understands is that nature is there. Now it's just how do you want to take part in this pastime? You know, down at the lower ends with Matangi and worse, or up at the upper ends with, you know, a, you know, religious wife with a virtuous husband and like this kind of a thing, you know? Because that, the upper end, can easily transform into the devotional line within the spiritual realm. The lower end is really hard to transform. You know? It's just really, it means you see Kubja, right? Krishna came and straightened out Kubja, made her into a beautiful girl. And so she invites Krishna over. Hey, I really want to thank you, and so come on over, because she's a society girl. Krishna's not interested. He comes in, talks with her, little smiles, and enjoys some of her feminine movements and graces and speaking and all that, and then he excuses himself and leaves. He's not going to have sex with him. You know? So that's not his interest. So therefore, unless virtue is the main thing, it's very hard to transform. Because Krishna won't accept it. It's considered the lowest form. Like that. As lust is there, it's directed towards Krishna, but Krishna's not interested, so there's no interaction. Like that. Does that make some sense? So that's why the virtuous thing of that duty and all that sense of service, that sense of wanting to serve, wanting to please, that is very important. So we can see is by taking any of these, all we're talking is devotional service. But we're just talking about how to use the feminine nature in devotional service. But it's consistent with devotional service. Right? It's not inconsistent. So that's the point. If that's caught, then it'll be there. So that's why nothing's done separately. You know, it's just like here, no sacrifice, no vow, no fast must be performed by women apart from their husbands. If a wife obeys her husband, she will for that reason alone be exalted. So it's like we wouldn't do anything that Krishna didn't approve of. Does that make sense? We wouldn't follow a sacrifice that's not approved for us by Krishna and the Acharyas. We wouldn't follow a vow or a fast that was not approved of by Krishna and the Acharyas. Right? So it's the same principle. It's just being brought down to, you know, it has to contact us where we're at. So we have the spiritual one, but at the same time, as long as we're dependent upon the material one, then it needs to be followed. Therefore, one should only connect oneself to a man who one is willing to be like this with. That's the bottom line. Is that only connect yourself to somebody that you would be happy to do this with. And even if the person goes weird on you, but still the principle remains. So it's like transfer it to Krishna, or, you know, or you have to live with it, you know, or at least live separately from it. You know? That's the...
You mentioned that if a woman doesn't trust a man, she finds it difficult to trust Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Vedic system, it was important that the girls were protected, so
yeah.
We always had a trusting relationship.
Yeah.
But now, Kaliyuga, we find that even amongst the virgins, sometimes women in their childhood, for example, a bigger
how can you overcome that? One would have to look at it is one would have to go to it through the intellect, because by intellect that's sadhana. Intellect is that you know you should do it, even though you may or may not like to do it, but you know you should do it. So then by the intellect then you choose a proper habit, and by the intellect only you inspire yourself to do it. It means the basic principle is the mind has had to accept that you want to do that. That principle is that you want to have that trust. So that's been accepted, but you don't have. But in theory it accepts it. So therefore then it will listen to the intelligence when it says, okay, this is how it's done. Does that make some sense? So then we go in as that the principle is, the masculine principle is there. If it's been misused by another living entity, that's their misuse. It doesn't mean that the principle itself is lost. Because our experience isn't the only experience. Like that. It's our experience means if we've been exploited, means in the past we have not been a great shelter for somebody. We haven't given shelter, so therefore we have lacked that shelter. So then in that way then we should look at both, is that maybe we're exploitive, so we're being exploited, you know. Maybe we're not being, but you know, somehow another is there. It depends upon who we exploited. You know, if we exploited an exploitive person, then we'll be exploited but being exploited. If we exploited someone who was not exploitive, then we will not be exploited but we'll be exploited. You know? But in either case, that principle is there. So we understand through the intellect that actually it's real. You know, that Krishna is there, he takes care, it works. But then we also have to see is what is our definition of take care. Because the general principle is women being religious tend to put that religion therefore is going to get economics and safety, economics and stability. Because that's what it does give on a certain platform. But ultimately, nothing's safe in the material world. Nothing's stable. So then one will always run into a difficulty if one expects that God's going to make everything nice and everything will be wonderful here in the material world. You know, I mean, this aberration of, you know, a religious concept of heaven on earth comes from this desire that, you know, I'm religious, I go to the, you know, the services, I'm a good person, so how come earth isn't heaven for me? You know, and if God fulfills that, great. If he doesn't fulfill it, then we got a problem with God. I'm doing my part of the bargain, how come he's not doing his? But that's the principle, is that it's not safe in the material world. You know? It's like the example is given of a drop of water on a lotus leaf. You ever seen that? You've all seen that? Yeah. It's just, it's not stable. It's nothing you can do to make it more stable. It always moves. At any moment it can run off. Because it's just, that's the way it is. So we're demanding that God make this place not the material world. Simply because we want to enjoy it. Rather than he's saying, don't bother with that. That's a lower thing. You want real maintenance, real protection, and real happiness, you come to the spiritual world. Right? That's where it's real. There, it's always going on. It's eternal. So therefore, you don't have to worry it's going to, you know, not be there. You're going to come back in the afternoon and, you know, there's been an earthquake and your house isn't there anymore, you know, or something. Or, you know, it's there. It's stable. The relationship is eternal. You know, anything that you do, it's all eternal. So it doesn't go away. Your relationships, your support, everything is there. So, but the demand that is here, so sometimes you'll see that's also a problem, is that material desire, besides that exploitation, because exploitation means you want something more than what you're supposed to get. Right? So that means is you expect to get something out of the material world. So that exploitive mood then has come to them as exploit them being exploited, but the principle is they think that the material world has something of value. So then, if God doesn't fulfill that, then they can't have trust in Him either. So it's bigger than the social issue. That's why Prabhupada says there's no material solutions to any material problems. There's only spiritual solutions. And implying the spiritual solution, then it has to connect with the material problem. So that's the interface. Therefore, then in this, it's social, therefore we have varnashram. That's the interface, but only if it's spiritually connected can it really solve the problem. Otherwise, material varnashram on its own can't solve anyone's problems. You know, you may solve some temporary problems, birth, death, old age, disease, those kind of go on. You know? So like that. So, but spiritual, then you deal with the material needs at present, what you can get, because we always have to remember is, we have been active before this lifetime, right? This isn't our first lifetime here. If it was our first lifetime here, then we'd have more than one head. At least minimum four. Right? You know. But so you just check it, you just look in the mirror. If you only have one, then you know it's not your first time around here. Like that. If you see four or more, then okay, then you can consider that maybe it is your first time here. Like that. So, yeah. Does that make sense? So if the principle is accepted, then by intellect, then you know that you can just take those steps and make it go forward. That's how you can change any habit. Any bad habit is changed by making a determination in the right direction. Yeah. Can you close this door? Are the windows closed? Then I'll close that one also. Okay. Let me just close it up. Is that one going?
Sorry?
Is that light going?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the principle behind it. Then one makes it practice, because we're not trying to go to heaven. But the point is, this means she'll be elevated. Right? Yeah.
But, because you said use the intellect, but like a few weeks ago, there was a discussion where men can use intellect, emotion, everything, and see this different, like, see, you know, in a different light, but ladies use emotion, intellect, everything all together.
Yeah.
So, does that mean, is that a combination?
Yeah, naturally. It just means that the intellect takes the prominent lead in it. You know, it's just like, let's say, a woman who has very bad experiences and emotions, doesn't have any, she'll take the senses and transform that into emotion. Means the lady down at the disco doing the striptease, that everybody is looking at her and she's able to control, just she moves and everybody moves in the audience, you know, then she has control. So she converts that sensuality into emotion. And they're all, if the house is packed, that means she has a value in life. So it gives her some prestige. So she's taken gross sensuality and converted it into emotion. Because as a woman, she can't function without it. You know, she can't function. So, one may do that. So in the same way, one can take intellect and convert that into it. Because we want to have those relationships. We want to develop that. We want to do this for Krishna. We want to do this for the devotees, the spiritual master. Then one uses the intellect to work out how that works. You know, just like cleverness, four times as clever, means they're using their intelligence. Clever is means is intelligence. Right? Like that. So a practical intelligence, that's called cleverness. So women, their intelligence is a clever intelligence. They may be academic or not, but it's just like you see in the primary and secondary, much of the time you see girls will be ahead of the boys because it's basically just memorization and putting things together. So samas, putting things together, is the women's thing. Right? The men's thing is picking it apart. The intelligence does two things. It picks it apart, sees the differences, or puts it together. You know? I mean, the girl can put together two people based on the funniest little thing, or take them apart based on the funniest thing. I remember one time, and I don't know what grade it was, but some girl's talking about some boy, and they're saying, oh, you know, this, yeah, yeah, you know, like that. How come? He had a wart. You know, that was it, you know. They were really into each other. She found he had a wart. That was it, you know. Relationship was dropped that second. You know. So the simplest things can put it together and take it apart. So samas, putting together, is very there. So all you have to do is memorize all the things and put them together, and so they do well. But you find then when you get into the graduate, especially postgraduate, then you'll generally see it's more men. Because there then is taking things apart and analyzing and breaking them down and stuff like that. So generally you see men stick it there. Because for the women it's not important. Putting together, you know, there's creating relationships is important. And seeing the difference is only to figure out relationships or figure out how it works, and then you put it back together. You know? Because putting it together makes relationship. Right? You know, it's like you have the girl, then you think, oh, very attractive. You bring Jack the Ripper, then no, it's not so attractive. You know, it's like that, you know. Everything's very neatly taken apart and put there and all around on the windowsill and on the dresser and everything and like that. But, you know, so not so attractive, you know. You ask anyone from medical school, not so attractive. Like that, you know. Everything's there, it's just spread all over the table. Does that make some sense? So as soon as you dismantle something, it's not attractive, right? It's just like if I come in and I have one reel of turquoise thread and one reel of white thread and a small reel of yellow thread, and I put it down on the table, those three, and say, what do you think of the sari? So I said, what sari? And now I put those together, then you say, ah, this is very nice. You know? So that's the thing. You know, you have your little mobile phone, it looks really great, and everybody likes it. Wow, where do you get that? You know, you dismantle, unscrew all the things, take out all the parts and spread it out on the table. And then bring your friend over and say, hey, you want to see my new mobile phone? Yeah, great. You know, they come over and says, where is it? Here. They go, ugh. Right? Everyone will say, wow, great phone. Right? But you bring the boys, and they'll go, hey, that's cool, you know, hey, like that. You know, for them, that's great, you know. You've taken it apart, yeah. You know, if you can get it back together, nice, but, you know. But for the girls, it already has to be together. As soon as it starts to fall apart, finished.
Is that because of the principle of gain and safety?
Yeah. Basically. Because gain means you're getting, and then what you get, you keep, because you have to have something. So how to get it, that's intelligence. So that's cleverness. So women are, in that way, very, very clever. You know, I mean, the most clever women means they just sit at home, do all the things that women like to do in the environment of their attachments. They just sit all day with whatever it is that they want to have in their life, and they sit there all day, and they send the mountain out, you know, to go bang his head against the material energy and drag everything back home. Like that. So that's intelligent. Right? And what do you have to do? You get the guy 8 hours a day out there on the street. How? A few smiles, a few this, a few that, and the guy's out there, you know, bewildered and running around. So that's intelligent. That's clever. So that's the principle. Women are very intelligent, but it's this particular kind. They may individually have, means all women have this intelligence. Now, each one may have different kinds of other intelligence also. Like that, various academic or arts or, you know, like this science. And that's an individual thing. But the principle is that all women will have that nature. You know, some more, some less. But that's common. Then you can see.
She must not seek to separate herself from her father, husband, or sons. By leaving them, she would make both her own and her husband's families contemptible.
Because then both families, that's the thing. A marriage means two families are united. That's why it says that kanyadan is considered the greatest of all charity. Like that on the, you know, because you give a cow, you give money, you just take it and do something. It doesn't establish relationships. You give a daughter, right? Then that means you've connected two families. So that's why it's considered the greatest of charity, is giving a daughter. Because then you connect. So that's why it says here, then you'll make two families contemptible, because it'll go down bad for both sides. Whoever the girl's side is from and whoever married the girl. So that's why then they're, you know, very careful like that, because the stakes are very high. That's the thing.
It's the most intense of the rasas, but the stakes in that rasa are the most high. Like that. You know, the West tries to reduce it, but it's reduced for the purpose of exploiting. The men want to exploit the women, and the women want to exploit themselves as women. So then they reduce it down so there isn't so much connection. Right? Because if there's more connection, you can't exploit as much. You have to serve more. You have to be involved, interact more. You're more seemingly... Your individual particular purposes may seem to be restricted, but because of the relationships that are developed, then the interaction is enhanced. Like that, yes.
Isn't it that the culture causes that men are exploited?
Yes, but you should keep that one a secret. Because the point is they want to be. You know? Because getting things, doing things, that's what they do anyway. They run around, do something. If they're not going out and working in a normal job, they'll be out pillaging and, you know, burning, and they gotta do something to keep themselves busy, you know? You know, like that. They have to do something to establish their control over whatever they can get their hands on. Yes?
How does that stand then next to what you just said about a woman being clever and she just sits in the house while a man runs around and, you know, basically gives whatever she wants? That seems, you know,
If you get down to the bottom line, there's nothing that's not exploitive about the man-woman relationship. I mean, the very basis of everything is. That's why it must be connected according to religious principles. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, this is the duty, so this is the way it is. Because the point is that we didn't create male and female relationships. We didn't decide what they like to do or not. Krishna likes to redress Radharani. He likes to put, you know, stuff on her feet. He likes to do these things. So that's there. So then that principle is there. We just have to follow what is the duty. Because we're just trying to please Krishna. It's their pastime. It's their interaction, not ours. I'm only pointing that out for the principle of, how you say? Nobody's getting the short end of the stick. You know, everybody's getting like that. You know? Everybody's getting. But it's just which angle you're looking at it. You know, this is the women's class, so we're looking at it from this angle. The men's class will look at it from another angle. You know, like that. So, therefore, that's why that mood is given up. It's that we're not being nice and pleasant in all this, because then the man becomes so inspired, or how do you say, empowered, you know, like that, that therefore he goes out and works so hard. We do it because this is what we're supposed to do. Because the point is the man has come to the women for this purpose only. Because on his own, you know, he can get things, he can move the material energy, great, but why do it? He has to move material energy, but he only feels inspired to do it if it's for someone else. Like that. So therefore, if it pleases a woman, he then feels inspired to do it. You know, he'll go out, conquer countries, or he'll do anything like that over women. You see great things, you know, over that, Antony and Cleopatra, and these are now great, you know, the Iliad and Odyssey. It's all over, you know, one woman. You know, they'll go out and, you know, move mountains. Because they want to do that anyway. That's their nature to go do that. But then with women involved, they're inspired. So they turn to the women for that emotional input and support, that pleasantness, that niceness. You know, the whole world can tell them they're great, but they have to hear it from a woman. Right? So that's why someone who doesn't need to hear it from a woman is freed from material energy. They're out. They're liberated. That's the whole point. So that's why if there's religious interaction between man and woman based on eternal principles, then the women will figure out, well, actually it's not the men that are actually my support, it's Krishna. And the men will figure out it's not actually the women where real rasa is, it's with Krishna. Like that. So then both of them turn to Krishna and go back to Godhead. That's why you get down and you scratch the surface. It's grungy from the top to the bottom. There's nothing divine about the whole thing. So therefore, it's a matter of duty. And if one follows the duties that go with it, then one finds that whatever is needed is gained, and one is freed from it. One is the desire for those things is given up. And one goes back to Godhead. One gets freed from the need for those desires. So it's a whole science, you know. And it's not—we're not talking a long time. We're talking—we've been in the material world since time immemorial. So we're talking about taking this up in just this lifetime, dealing with it properly, liberating ourselves, getting out of here. Like that. So it's pretty good, you know, for being here eternally, you know, practically, than here in such a short time, if this is understood. You take the same things you're attached to, connect them to Krishna, you know, that pleases Krishna, and you're freed from the material contamination. Now you have the other side, is to become attached to Krishna, that you get into the spiritual world. But by this method of Nishkam Karma Yoga, you're freed from the material energy. Does that make sense? Is that? Yeah, because the whole thing's rotten.
Well, he says that, you know, the way it's coming across is that, you know, it's kind of virtuous to use your intelligence to manipulate
me. No, that's not the point we were making. That was a side point being made, that it's that. Means you can take it in both positive and negative. Positive in that the ladies like their environment, and then the men will go out and take up the slack that's missing in that environment. Right? The woman's world's not complete, the man's world's not complete. So then the man is willing to fill in what's missing in the woman's world, and the woman is willing to fill in what's missing in the man's world. What's exploitive is if the woman, you know, inspires and allows the man to fill what's missing in her world but doesn't reciprocate. That's my point, is if she deals in the proper way, it has been. That's why I said I'm only looking at it from the view on this side, is whatever is needed is taken care of. Right? But by dealing in that nice way, what the man is looking for is also taken care of. So he doesn't see it as exploitation. Right? And if one gives up that mentality, that one is performing one's duties for the fruitive result, then that means you give up the exploitative mood. Even though the other person hasn't been exploited because you've done your duties, and they're satisfied, but you still have the exploitive mood. So when you give that up, that's beneficial for you. But if you're exploitive in mood and in method, then that's irreligious. But we're talking in the beginning, one might be exploitive in mentality, but not in method. And by practice and by changing that from the platform of devotion to transcendence, then in that you'll transfer it from exploitive to non-exploitive to devotional. Does that make some sense? So that's the point we're just making. In other words, we're trying to that was more said in jest than in, but it's real. But you say it a lot, and the ladies, they smile at that. Some of them, those who know the more of it, then the smile is more and more hidden. It's just a slight, faint, little, we know what you're talking about. But it's all kept quiet. And those who are more virtuous, then they're doing it simply because this is their duty. And that's their purpose. So that's more virtuous. It's considered, a woman is chaste if she just sticks to one man, performs her duties, even though her mind is thinking about every man on the planet. She'll still be called chaste. But she doesn't go down in the books as one of the most chaste. Right? Does that make some sense? Proper, fully chaste means body, mind, and words. They don't think of another man. Like Gandhari, that's brought out very obvious. She's one of the big five. With her body, she didn't deal. With her mind, she never thought of. With her words, she never addressed. She'd never talk about another man like that. Maybe other male relatives, but never about another man. They wouldn't talk about, hey, what do you think of this boy? Or, hey, he's a nice guy. Never. That's not a conversation for that character of lady. She may talk about uncle said this, grandfather said that, cousin said this, brother said that, but it's all part of the family relationship. So that is then chaste, where they go down in the books and people read about them and become inspired. Damayanti, Savitri, what's her name? Ahalya, Anasuya. And these are ones that are on that caliber. But otherwise, if externally she follows everything perfectly and never deviates from that, then everyone will say she's chaste. Because who knows what's going on in her head? She knows, but others may not know.
And
it depends on where she wants to go. She's known as a chaste woman. She's not known as a great fabulous devotee. You know what I'm saying? She's known for being chaste, not for being a great devotee. Draupadi is known for being a devotee. Damayanti is not known for being a devotee. So most of these ones aren't, coming up Mandodari. It's not known. So they are on that level of karma, so therefore they will go to the heavenly planets. Even if the husband doesn't, they will go. And because they've gone, and because that chastity, that will protect them, and they'll get benefit from that. So in any case, then the husband's always protected if the wife is chaste. Okay. You had something?
I was just going to make a comment about how it's a reciprocal thing, that the husband's going out and doing all this horrible stuff to earn money, but changing the nappies and putting the work and cleaning up after they eat, and that also makes maybe not so pleasant. But then if you have the mood that you're doing it to please the husband because he has to earn the money to do it, makes a nice cycle.
Because the whole thing is there's nothing nice about the whole thing.
Just sit home and sort of do nothing.
One has to take it, otherwise I'll stop cracking jokes.
Okay.
Like that. That'll make life easier.
Make that clear, that we just don't sit there.
One thing you have to remember, this room is not full of women because I don't know what's going on. That's my point. So, like that. Because changing a nappy, it's you're changing the nappy of something you're attached to. You go out there and butt heads against somebody that you hate to be in the same room with, but you got to do it because you got to get money. And if you don't bring home the money, your wife is a mad woman. That is worse. Because the nappies are your attachment. House is your attachment. Your clothes are your attachment. Your pots are your attachment. He has to go out there and deal with things that I have no attachment for at all. So there's no rasa, no taste, nothing, dry as a bone. So that's why when he comes home, he expects the wife to be pleasant and create an atmosphere of rasa, because he doesn't have any when he's outside.
That was the point that I was going to ask you from last class. I wrote down, sometimes it's not always possible to be cheerful in all circumstances, especially, you're trying to maintain cheerfulness and, there's really heavy things going on around you. Isn't that kind of a heavy burden on a woman?
It is, but that's the austerity. That's the thing. But cheerfulness is just, that's the best. It means always that. But it means pleasantness. There has to be pleasantness. Because the thing is one always has to remember is the unpleasantness of women doesn't bother women so much. It's a great annoyance. But because all the women have that same nature, it doesn't bother them. Just like the unpleasantness of men doesn't bother men so much. One man can make a snide comment to another man. It doesn't bother him that much. You cross the lines and it's devastation. Because the woman's comment will be emotional. And it's in the realm of emotion, so they can all relate. Like that. But in the man's thing, he's looking at it a certain way and they bring in these emotional things that don't make any sense. And so then they cut the heart. The man's heart's very gentle. But he covers, they're like a crab. They got a hard outside, they're very soft on the inside. Like that. Women are the opposite. So, therefore, and then it pains them. There's nothing worse. It means you could be insulted by the whole world, and it wouldn't bother you as much as if one woman insults you. At the same time as the other way is the man, what they say that's insulting, is completely devoid of emotion. So that devastates women because it just doesn't compute. You know, it just... It takes a relationship and takes all the exchange out of it down to just bare mechanics. And that destroys women. So that's why the gentleness must be there. Because the man must be gentle. Like that. But this is not a grihastha class. This is a women's class. If this was full of men, then you'd hear me going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
I was just thinking that it seems a bit one-sided, that it's responsibility of the women to maintain that.
Because this room is full of women. I said it, this was a grihastha class. I keep going back and forth between the man and this. That's why, you missed a whole bunch of classes where we go through. You're coming in already, means you're coming in already, we're in the secondary phase of the study, and you're asking primary questions.
Okay,
that's the difficulty, is we've addressed these things before. Taking that now we have a certain mood here that we can talk on a certain level, then we're going into it. We don't need to go out and talk about what the men are supposed to do, because it's already been established that that's understood, that they have their duties and they're supposed to take care and all these things. Now let's get down to what is the woman supposed to look at it. But it's not a matter of defending, it's a matter of what are we supposed to do. That's the thing, because that other side is there, that's there, but that's their business. You know, that's what the other class is for the men.
So then go further, then how do we maintain the cheerfulness?
Yeah, that is, it's a matter of is consideration of the relationship and what's going on and things like that. It's the same for both. Whatever works on one side works on the other. It's just a matter of the specifics of exactly how it's applied. But that gentleness and pleasantness has to be used by both, because that is the point of contact. Because the man's world and the woman's world are two separate worlds, but there's a small point of overlap. But that point of overlap must be approached with gentleness, because that's the interface. It means women's world is, even though it may be very attached, very materialistic, but because it's the field is basically emotion, therefore there's a gentleness to it, there's a subtlety to it, like that. Though they may be very attached and like that, but there's a subtlety to that attachment. So the expression of the attachment is gentle, like that. So if a man wants to deal with women, he has to be gentle. That's why I always, you know, hear about, you know, the woman has to domesticate him many times. Because he doesn't know how to be gentle. He doesn't actually know how to interface with women. Like that. So that gentleness must be there.
Can I call gentleman?
Yeah. So then the same way is the women have to maintain that on their side. One always has to remember to sit there when a woman's head is falling apart. And in the first 30 seconds to 3 minutes that she starts talking, the man's already figured out the problem and has a solution. But he has to sit there and say nothing and listen to this, what do you call it? Soliloquy. Yeah, I wanted to pick a nicer word, but that's, of the same thing that was said in the first 30 seconds from 10 different angles. And, slightly changing it each time, and this one said, and that one from over here, and that one was on that side of the park, and this one saw from this side, and all these different things, and throw that in with everything else that's happened in the day, and all that. And then he has to just sit there, and it's not logical. And the man, if he goes to another person and says, I have a problem, he only goes if he wants a solution. Right? Otherwise, he'll work it out himself. Generally, men like to work it out themselves. Yeah, so that's the point. That is the austerity of men. That is the most painful thing, to sit there for 45 minutes to an hour, watch this head that's falling apart, sit there, and pay attention. You can't read the newspaper at the same time. Right? Yeah, you have to pay attention, say all the yes, all at the right time. And then at the end, because it's all been said, just watch this lady, from completely devastated. He's thinking, wow, I'll never work this problem out. And at the end, then she's all happy and chirpy and this, and he just went, what just happened? Is this living entity sane or insane? And then after all that, then he's just got to go on as if it was perfectly normal. And just say, that. Either if there is still a problem, make a comment after having digested and seen it from 20 angles. Make that comment that, yes, this is like this and that. Maybe you could do this or that. And then there's a discussion. Or if she's already worked it out, she's already happy, and then he has to be happy that she's happy and just go on and just pretend it never happened. So that's my point. It's an austerity because the two worlds are so different. So the gentleness, being gentle, is the austerity of both sides. Like that. It's the austerity of both sides. Yeah.
That's comfy. It's an austerity
on both sides. Yeah. Everything is an austerity on both sides. That's why it says 50-50. But this is like, to look at it, what is it that the tools that the woman's using to, like that, maybe we shouldn't have done this first. Maybe we should have just started from the main thing. Because the main thing starts off with all the men's duties. And you have, 5 chapters of that. And then after that, then we get to a half a chapter of the women's duties here. Because so many are common. Like that. So next time we run it, we'll run it that way. it'll make it easier. Because then it's more clear what's going on and this and that. So I was only running it this way because I know a lot of the ladies here are only here up to the festival and then have to go. They're not here all year. So I figured we should get through some of these things before they go.
It's okay. I just thought it sounded very complicated.
Like that.
There's the place.
Yeah. Yes.
Raj, how do you explain the fact that men have a heart, a soft heart, and rough manners, and women have a hard heart and soft manners?
Basically is the means is as I, then that's an identity, so that's very strong. Man can be confident on his own. He can stand on his own. But for the mind aspect, then the woman has to be involved. So there must be, the man has to surrender himself to that woman. So he has to put his emotions in her care, because that's the field that she deals in. So then, if she deals with them gently, then okay. And if not, then they pull back. They get hurt very easily that way, from the inside, not from the outside. They can handle a lot of roughness on the outside, but not so much on the inside. Not when they take it where they've actually trusted somebody and stuff like that. They get very hurt there. Like that. The women, it's their interface and everything is gentle because it's on the platform of emotions. But within that platform of emotions, it's mind. Mind is the principle. So then you have to collect that mind. You know? That mind has to be, you have to have something to connect to be mine. Does this make some sense? Not getting through here. The male principle is I, the feminine principle is mine. Both have both. But I'm saying the emphasis of the male is on I, the emphasis of the female is on mine. So then that creates the why each needs the other. You can't, if you control but can't enjoy, there's no, what's the meaning? You can't enjoy something unless you can control it. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, there's different aspects of control. Like that. The male control, the female control. They're different. The female controls by her pleasantness and niceness and the emotions and all that kind of thing. Is that's her control that then gets her facilities. The man, then his control is his basically self-control, his independence. Because the feminine nature isn't independent, so if a man is independent, then that gains respect from her. Like that. Then she'll surrender. Like that. You know, while the man will see the emotions and all that, and if that's consistent and all that, then he'll surrender. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. So there's a slight difference there. You know what I'm saying? Is the man, what the woman is, means you're dealing both with subtle elements, but it's just there's a difference in flavor between I and mine. Can you see that difference or?
Mine is more gross than I, right?
On one's platform, I is one's existence. Like the woman, she needs to connect to something to actually establish her existence. Man has an existence, but it's not complete. He wants to fill it by adding a woman. By putting the man, it creates a platform of what her existence is. She has her world, but it doesn't have any place to sit. He has a place to sit, but it's empty, so he brings a woman. Does that make some sense? So that's the subtlety of the two. It's the same thing. It's just from the other side. You know, it's like you have a coin, there's two sides on it. So it's the same coin. So the principles that apply for the women, also the same exact things apply for the men. But it just, there is a slight difference, so you come into it from two different angles. You know? It means, in other words, that overlapping of the men's and women's world is the same place. So it takes the same qualities and everything to manage it, to run it. There's no difference. They both have to be dutiful, they both have to be gentle, they both have to be sensitive. You know, they both have to be, you know, like a team player, they have to, that confidential, everything has to be there. But the approach is that you're approaching it from the women's world, and it's that side of the women's world. And the men, it's that side of the man's world. Because otherwise women have another world, men have another world. That are completely different, and neither will understand what's going on in it. You get two men together in the conversations, women think, what's this? Pretty stupid. There's no substance there. Why? Because there's no emotions, there's no going on. The men will hear the women have conversation, and think, well, this is pretty stupid, because it's all just emotion, there's nothing there. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty, is that you have it's the same point, but one needs to understand it from one's particular vantage point. One has to be clear of what one's own vantage point is, then you can fully understand the other one. Because you can access the other one through that common middle of that duty. So if the women understand their nature, understand how to interface, then they can understand what's on the other side also. Why that interface is important. But they have to understand why it's important for them. You know, if you can understand yourself, you can understand others. Like that. You know, and by studying others, the purpose is to understand yourself. Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why it's called self-realization, because to realize the self. So self has so many different levels: the gross body, the subtle body, the intelligence, the ego, then the soul. So all these are considered self. So as long as one's entangled with the gross and subtle identities of self, you have to know what they are, know how they function, how to interact with them, how to use them. Then how to bring those to the next platform. How to bring them to the next platform. Does that get anywhere, or we got too much on a tangent? The heart, well, see, in the emotional field, when you grow up, a daughter is part of the mother's world. The son's not. So all emotions, nurturing, care come from the mother's world. So then he sees women as one who takes care of this and who you can go to for these problems. You're sick, you're this, you're that, your mother's always there. So that's their understanding of what women are. So if that ass quality is there in the wife, it works. That's why it's said that each rasa, as it goes up, contains the others. So he also is looking to the wife for that motherly rasa. You know, friendship rasa, servitor rasa, you know, shanta rasa. It's not just the conjugal, because otherwise how would you define conjugal then? You know, husband and wife don't talk together, make plans together, you know, they're friends. One of them's having difficulty and the other, they're not like helping them take care, that's parental. You know, I'm saying the interaction like that of man-woman, that feeling that they have amongst themselves, that's conjugal. Like that. So it's not the only. Each one is serving the other. So servitorship is there. And the whole thing is the whole point of rasa only has meaning if there's appreciation for the other person. You know? So to that depth you want to be appreciated, that depth, it has to be, the relationship has to be established. You know, the modern is they establish it on the body. So they have appreciation for the body. The boys like the body. Every time the girls walk by, they whistle and make catcalls. And they appreciate. But that's all. They don't appreciate him more than that. So the Vedic is that the full aspect of the womanhood should be appreciated by the man. The full aspect of the manhood should be appreciated by the woman. Then the relationship can function in all five rasas. Otherwise, it only functions on sex, and that's called conjugal rasa. But the other four aspects of rasa aren't there. So it's not complete. They can't maintain it, you know, because I mean, there's a limited amount of time you can spend in bed, you know. I mean, whatever, you know, what is it? John Lennon and Yoko Ono, they spent 7 days, but even they had to get out of bed at some point, you know. So then, you know, it just, you know, gets a little old real fast, you know. At least you got to take a bath, you know. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. A little bit. So they, therefore, that's where they see the women there. And so then, if they give their emotions and they're not dealt with properly, then they pull it back. But the girls grow up; they're part of the mother's world. So those same feelings, those same emotions, the mother takes care and all that. But that's just part of the thing, interaction. Of the feminine nature is mother for the universe. You know? Father is father, but mother can be anybody. Does that make sense? So it's just part of the scene, it's part of the world. So then the daughter then is within that world with the mother. And much of the time the mother is expecting that the daughter is going to interact with her in that and work together with her in taking care of the men of the family. She'll help in the cooking or help in the serving or help in this and that. So the duties of the mother are then, as she grows and matures, shared with the daughter. But the sons, it's not like that. They don't share in the mother's duties, like as such. They may just for rasa come and do something for her, but it's just an emotional thing. But it's not the same world. There's a difference. The two worlds are different. They're two different headspaces. So if that's understood, that's what Prabhupada says: man can't understand woman; woman can't understand man. There's a story. I'm not sure which Purana. I think it's in the Sringa Purana. I'm not sure. Narad Muni, because no, that was Rumba. Narad Muni, he always was, you know, contemplating how the psychology and everything of how the material world works. And so there's many conversations where he contacts one of the apsaras or somebody and asks them, what's the nature of women? And then they explain it. You know, the shastras, the nature of women is always explained by women. You don't hear it explained by men. Like that. You know, 11th canto is explained by Pingala, 9th canto is explained by Urvasi. Anytime it's explained, it's always explained by one of the women. Like that. The story may be retold by a man, but it doesn't start from a man. Like that. What is it? Tilotama. She told all kinds of things. And that, and others, they all tell all these different things. So he one day asked Lord Shiva, since he figured he's his brother and he is the lord of the material energy, who's the original woman. So he asked him, could you explain to me the nature of women? Then Lord Shiva fell silent, became very grave for a long time. And then after a long silence, and he said to Narad Muni, he says, I've been thinking about this for millions of years and I still can't understand. Right? So, you know, here we're just trying to present what is the common point and what is some of the elements that are understood or from that world that you can use to be confident that it works and it's good to do, you know, as a tool. So that's the thing. You see is that the bluntness, actually, on certain levels, because as we mentioned before, each have their bluntness and grossness. So the bluntness that women accept and reject emotional platforms and services done by other people and all that is different from the man's grossness. So that, it's very sharp. Because the women's world is more extreme. To get emotion, there must be extremity. Right? It means if you present any kind of drama or any kind of like theme, there must be some extremity. Otherwise, if it's just day to day, you know, like, yeah, they got up today and then, you know, she took a bath and he took a bath and, you know, she made something to eat and he ate it and, you know, and he said, how you doing this morning? And she said, yeah, fine, it's okay. Any dream last night? Yeah, not so much, can't remember it. And, okay, I got to go to the office. Yeah, see you later. You know, and, you know, then he went to the office and rode in the bus and sat in the seat he generally sits in and, you know, nothing happening. It was, you know, a little rain outside. And got to the office and, you know, same dreary old office, same, you know, do you think this would sell? Do you think we'd make a Broadway special out of it or something? We win any Academy Awards, best script or, you know, like that? No, you get nothing out of it. So there has to be extremity. So the women's world is more extreme. They're either happy or sad. Right? You can ask a man, how you doing? Okay. And it is. It's just okay. But you never hear a woman go, okay. It's like, you're like, okay. Or, okay. Right? There's no okay. You only hear men say that. So women are always this side or that side. It's always, you know, up or down. That's what makes the excitement. Krishna is Atmarama. He's just playing. Like that. He has everything, but it's all there. It's just him. He's stable. You know exactly what's going to happen. As you deal with him, he's going to reciprocate. Guaranteed. Right? But the gopis, you don't know what their mood's going to be day to day. They could be pleased with them, they could be angry with them, they could be anything. So for God, that's fun. But for the living entity trying to be God, it's not. Right? So that's the thing. Krishna's just playing with his counterpart. Prabhupada says, like, you know, a child playing in the mirror with their reflection. It has that innocence, this purity, and that's what he's actually dealing with. Does that make some sense? So, for him, it's fun, because he is God, he is the enjoyer, so he does enjoy it. He does enjoy that difference. Like you take all of Krishna's moods, you know, Dira Lalita, Dira Prashanta, Dhirodatta and Dhirodatta. Four moods Krishna has. You know, one of virtuousness, like Ramachandra is the example. I think that's Dhirodatta. Then Dhiralalita, the example is like, you know, Krishna with the gopis. You know, a boy who's completely controlled by his girlfriends. Then you have Dhiraprashanta, that's like Yudhishthira, completely satisfied, aloof. And then you have Dhirodatta. You know, that like when Krishna is dealing with Poundraka, you know, really in your face, insulting, you know, the frog Poundraka is going to be swallowed by the black snake Krishna today. That kind of attitude. You know, in other words, where you have a bit of an attitude. Like that. So you take those, all these different four levels of age and all these different things, all the combination of the personality, basically you get 96. I think it is. But with Radharani, you get 200 and something. So it's much more fine little things. And the men, like the Santri Babas, there's 33 little moods. They're constantly moving through those. While Krishna, it'll be in one mood, and then it'll switch to another mood, and then to another mood. It moves. The switch is less. It means there always has to be switch to create variety. But his switch then is enhanced by the gopis' constant switching. So that's where it comes from. That's the origin of it. But here, then, because the living entity isn't God, isn't in control, isn't the enjoyer, then the men and women drive each other nuts. That's why then you need the Dharma Shastra to say exactly how they should interact, otherwise it won't work. Like that, because otherwise you have, like I said, two women who are trying to be men, and then somehow or another by musical chairs, one's a man, one's a woman. So that whole mix can get really bewildering. Therefore, the Shastra is there to say, okay, you know, you ended up in chair A, okay, this is what you should do. If you're in chair B, then this is what you should do. Like that. That's the only reason. Because otherwise, what's the clue? You don't know. Plus, you add on to that 8,400,000 species. Okay, we're back in human species. Okay, but what is our experience before? What are our habits before? Who knows what animal species we're dealing with? You know, or what human species we're dealing with? You know, vanaras are also human. Yakshas, rakshasas, paisachas, goats, ghosts, ganas—they're all humans. Like that. So the mentalities, and then what it is that we should actually do to get somewhere. And so the Shastra then tells us. Otherwise we leave it up to our own inspiration purely, then we might find that it's not progressive. So the progressiveness is very, very important. Does that get somewhere? Like that. Much of these things, I can explain something, but to fully understand you have to contemplate it yourself. I had one lady ask this in Hungary in the evening time. Then explained it. You know, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, And then in the morning time, because she was contemplating it and looking at it, then she came in the morning and said, now I understand. Because she saw herself do it. Then she could see, oh, now I know what you mean. It's just that cutting. You know, it's just like, you've done something. You've worked so hard. It's so nice. But a woman can find one little flaw in it and write the whole thing completely off. But it's not it's insensitivity, but it's within the realm of sensitiveness. Therefore, it's more sharp. While the man, he may not notice. You've spent all day cleaning it and all that. He'll walk in, hi, Bill. You know, and didn't you notice how nice the house looks? So that's an insensitivity, but that's not in the realm of emotion. It's just ignorance. You know? Like that. So therefore, it's very distressing for the woman, but that's just because, you know, they're idiots. You know, they're not observant. But in the women, when they do that, they're fully observant, know everything about it, know what went into it, but at the same time, they still point out the fault. Therefore, raises it. It's much more cutting. You know? So that's the principle, is that women, men, if they're still trying to maintain the relationship with the woman, they'll always pull the punches. So even they make heavy, nasty comments, there's still some consideration there. Only if they don't want that relationship to go on, then they'll say things that can completely destroy a woman. But the woman, just by the emotion, she'll say things that destroys the man, though she wants it to go on. Because it's only one world of emotion. She doesn't distinguish between, but the man can distinguish between the out of the emotional world or in the emotional world. For a man, it's a choice. So that's why the men have to be trained to be aware that when they're dealing with women, they always have to take into consideration the emotional field. Because they don't have to in the men's world. You know, it's just a different world. You don't have to. You know, it's addressed to some degree, but it's not the prominent element. You know? Like, you know, a common funny thing that men will get into, it's like, you never hear women do it, is a man, somebody will say something, and then one man will, you know, something funny or something slightly absurd. Right? And then the other man will say, take that and take it into something more absurd, and then more absurd, and each one will go back and forth, going to the weirdest and weirdest kind of things. Because what's doing is just they're using, it's the fun of using the intelligence to come up with stranger and stranger things, combinations. Put together this and that, I put together this and this. It's all intellectual. And they enjoy that. And the women just sit around, what are these idiots going on about? You know? Because you're not dealing with any emotions there. You know? And it's all varied and it doesn't make any sense. Because from the woman's world, it's where is its root in emotion? They can't find it. So therefore it has no meaning. But then in the man, the woman, they'll move from one emotion to a next emotion. And the only connection is the emotion. It's not another form of logic. And so then to the man, they don't see the path that it's running through. But it's just moving from one taste of one emotion to the next. So they don't see where it's connected. So then they'll say that's strange. Everything's from the modes of nature. It means the mind is from the mode of goodness, the intelligence from the mode of passion, the ego is from the mode of ignorance. Mm-hmm. Like that. Connected to the intelligence is the senses. They're both from passion. But the intelligence can control the senses, the mind controls the senses. They're both lord of the senses. So an intelligent person, a controlled person, the intelligence is more in control. The mind chooses how you use the senses, but if the mind is virtuous, it will always choose a virtuous way of doing it. Therefore, it depends upon the intelligence to show the right choice. Then the mind will take it. The intelligence decides what is the proper virtuous choice, and because virtue is the value of the mind will accept it. It'll just see, okay, out of these three options, option A is the most virtuous. Therefore, the mind takes that, because that's the principle it's working on. Then, even though the mind is still considered the lord of the senses, it's being controlled by the intelligence. Because senses work by intelligence. means you have to distinguish. It's very, it's, you know, how you say, man touches woman, right? Then he gets something out of it. He can tell the difference. He can tell definitely it's not him he's touching. You know? Like that. But that touch, then there's so many finer points within it that the woman can see. So her intelligence can function within that sensual realm to a much refined degree than generally most men. If a man looks into the field, then yes, he can go very deep. You know, like we see, all women can cook nicely, right? But you're generally, when you think of chefs, they're all men. Because if they go into it, then that's totally what they do. Well, cooking is part of the woman's world. It's one of the things. It's not their world. But a chef, that's their world. Is their cooking, you know, the spices and the herbs and their pots and their knife and their spoons. And, you know, for women, it's just part of the world. It's all there for rasa. But for the man, it is the rasa, that combinations and all these. In other words, how you can put it together. You know?
Isn't that in the realm of emotion?
Which, no, it's not, it's different. It's within, but you have to, it's just like this. Let us say it's 90% intelligence, 10% emotion. Which will you call it? Emotion or intelligence? And if it's 90% emotion, 10% intelligence, which would you call it? That's the point. They always find some of the one and the other. There's nothing pure. You don't find pure, in the material world, you won't find pure goodness, pure passion, pure ignorance. They are interconnected. Because no one is in goodness unless there is a desire to be there for, because the result, I want to go to the heavenly planets, or I want to get out of the material world. So someone like that then follows the rules that situates them in goodness, but their desire to do it is coming from passion. And there has to be some ignorance that they don't know that they're a servant of Krishna. Otherwise, how can they be interested in karma and jnana? So their actual basis of identity has to be ignorance. The motive for doing anything must be passion. But now it's which mode you actually set. What is your goals that you're trying to attain, your identity that you take, and your methods? That will put it in, situate it in goodness, passion, or ignorance. So everything is just like you're cooking. You would say cooking is passion because you're creating. But you're taking a potato and you're destroying its form as a potato and cutting it up into little pieces. So destruction is being used. Right? Like that. If you want it to work, then you have to work actually with the nature of the item. Right? You can't throw yogurt into something directly hot that's cooking on the fire. You have to take it off. Right? You see the chefs, they do that. You always see them. You ever wonder why you've seen them cooking like this and suddenly they take it off, put something in like that, and put it back on. This is yogurt. Yogurt, if it hits something that's directly hot, it splits. And you don't want it to split. Then you don't get a nice sauce. Right? So it's taken off. So in other words, it's the science of it in its mechanics of it working. So therefore, the intelligence is the prominent thing. Some emotion is there. Some inspiration is there. It's coming from the mind. But it's mind working in the realm of intelligence. Rather than intelligence working in the realm of the mind. So for the women, it's generally intelligence is working in the realm of the mind. While men, it's the mind is working in the realm of intelligence. It's got to be logical first, then they can accept it emotionally. For the women, it's got to be emotional, otherwise they can't accept it, even though it's logical. It's not so much the lower modes. Because the mind is actually in goodness and the intelligence is in passion. Like that. But at the same time as the intelligence is superior to the mind. So this is the funny, this is why if it was so easy to understand, we would have figured it out, you know, as Lord Brahma. The first time we came in and just said this place isn't worth it. But it's so complex that even Brahma is bewildered. You know? So that's the difficulty. So we know as much of it that'll work for us, that we can work with. So we figure out what is our nature, how do we fit into it, how much we can work, and then we can move on from it. Then it works good. But if we go beyond that, you know, unless we have the capacity to assimilate it and use it, then there's no real benefit. You know, that's why it's, you start from the principle and work out. You know, it's like, you know, you drop a rock in the pond. There's a hole in the center. Then you have the rings going out from that. So you have to start from there. You know that center is Krishna, and we're his servant. Then, depending upon our nature and everything, then we can accommodate how many rings we can. So someone who's very, you know, qualified may need so many rings. Someone else less. But it doesn't matter how many rings, because you already got Krishna in the center. It's already perfect. That's what's so beautiful about the system. Is real intelligence just understand that Krishna is God, I'm his servant. And by pleasing God, you know, then I'll be pleased. And so the method is through love render service. And to that degree that I'm only working for him, to that degree actually one is satisfied, because then the more there's that surrender, the more he is satisfied. So that's why that principle is there. It's actually that quality of bhakti is what is being applied here. Right? Radharani, it means Braj is the highest form. Because there Krishna can do whatever he wants. In Vaikunthi he can't. He has to sit there on that throne all day and listen to the prayers. And because those devotees are there, he wants to do that. He wants to reciprocate. But he's limited there. He couldn't do something crazy. But in Braj, he can do anything he likes. Because the surrender and affection of the devotees, that's the difference, right, between an acquaintance and somebody who's an intimate friend. Or just regular friends. Regular friends is, they know something about you. You don't reveal more. But with intimate friends, you can really just be yourself and be as crazy as you like, and they appreciate you. So that's the principle is here, is that it should be that the man and woman, it all functions nicely like this, they both do the duties and everything. But even if they don't, it still has that principle. Therefore, aslishiva padhara tampi nashtamam. You deal with me nicely, you don't deal with me nicely, but still the relationship is maintained. So that's the highest there. Here is considered the lowest. Means that situation in which the man is bad and this and disgusting, it's the lowest situation. It's bad. It's not a good situation. But the feminine principle remains. Does that make sense? So this one here, yeah, then though destitute of virtue or seeking pleasure elsewhere, devoid of good qualities, the husband will be constantly respected by a faithful wife. So that then is what the gopis are doing, but to the topmost perfection. Therefore, they're the most chaste. So the principle is there. That's what I'm saying, is the principle has to be understood, because it has to go to Krishna. All these principles that are here about the husband has to go to Krishna at some point. But they shouldn't be obstructed by not liking the external material situation. And because it's you know masculine, therefore you were in a fire in the barn when there was a fire, so therefore every time the cow now sees red, it gets freaked out that it's fire. The principle is that, you know, barns or a shelter then has to be maintained, otherwise there's a problem. So that the masculine principle is the shelter, and that masculine principle is Krishna. Masculine means the controller and enjoyer. Therefore it's that he's the reservoir of pleasure. He is rasa.
He has also a taste for the left-wing manifestation of...
But you notice one thing is the left wing, they're the ones that say asli shiva padaritam vinashtamam. Means they'll be difficult to get, but whatever he does, they're the most surrendered. So the two go together. The more left it is, the greater the surrender. In the material world, the left wing is considered lower here, because it's just left wing. There is no balance on the other side of more surrender. Left wing means less surrendered here. Right wing means surrendered.
For a couple of devotees, if the wife antagonizes the husband on the basis of Krishna consciousness, the husband may appreciate it.
Yes, but that's because the principle is to see to his, she is a well-wisher and she wants to see to his betterment. She's not doing it as the controller. She's doing it as trying to assist. You know, it means it's just like, it's a common thing that if you have, in England, the aristocracy, they have butlers. These butlers are so well-trained. They will ask them what should they wear to this occasion, or what should be served, or what should be... In other words, all the fine things of what actually they should do, they ask the butler. You know, many times. Because that's all they do, is that. So that's their field. So, but they may give suggestion, they may even show disapproval. But still, the master is the master. Like that. The master wants to do something the butler doesn't approve of. That's the way it goes. So, wife can suggest, point it out for their benefit and all that, but at the same time, it shouldn't be in a way of trying to control or this or that. It's for their betterment. And if they decide to go against it, you let it go and try again later. Therefore, the Gita says patience is one of the feminine qualities. Patience, tolerance, all those good qualities. It said anybody who has that is considered elevated. But those are the qualities in which the women function. If they do that, then they'll be considered glorious.
What happens in case your husband becomes really obnoxious?
Then Prabhupada mentions if it's intolerable, then live somewhere else. But don't, you know, take up with somebody else. It's not worth it. Means one always considers the outside Krishna consciousness, whatever happens has happened. And when you comes into Krishna consciousness, you know what's going on, and this and that, then you can follow nicely. You know, it's just like when you buy something from the market. If you ascertain in the market that it's pure, then you pay your money and it's purified. Right? That sack of potatoes has been thrown on the ground, put into trucks, you know, laborers have slept on it and, you know, eaten their muslim mudi on top of it and, you know, they've done everything on top of your potatoes. But when it gets to the market, it's sitting there, a very nice pile and all that, and it looks okay to you. So now once you get it, now you deal with it properly. You don't do anything impure to it, because if you do, it's considered impure. So in the same way, it's whatever's happened before Krishna consciousness, don't worry about it. You know, one's been married 20 times, it doesn't matter. But once you come to Krishna consciousness, then try to understand what's going on and then move in the proper way. You know. So if it's not, then Prabhupada says separate. If it can't work, separate, because the most important thing is to be Krishna conscious. One can't, in other words, to be a righteous wife, you can't lose your Krishna consciousness. So if that's more important, then separate. You know. But if Krishna consciousness can be maintained, but it's a hassle, then better that situation, because it's more safe. Like that.
There is a question concerning what you just said about items you purchase in the shop. They get purified by the exchange of Lakshmi, right?
Yeah.
But if someone...
Well, I mean, it's a one-way exchange, basically.
Yeah. But if someone is writing down a credit note,
yeah, but it's still, your money has already been transferred. It's already been done. It'll only be purified at the end of the month. Right? Now, if you don't pay your bill, then that's another thing. Yeah. So I think we went over the time. So, wow, we got through a whole of... 3 verses. God. Okay. Huh?
Is it the austerity because it's like this?
Yeah, it's difficult because the emotions move so much, it's always difficult to be cheerful. You know, and for the man, because he's working in a world that's devoid of any kind of pleasant emotion, to come home and to be the same, then he'd rather stay out with his friends. Like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinda ki, Jainita Govardhana ki.